You're listening to Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Chris McFeely, and Chris Triplett.
And you are listening to Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD, joined by Chris Triplett and Chris McFeely. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hello.
Howdy.
So today it is Fanboy Versus the End of the Universe. Maybe. As we'll talk about Green Lantern later in the show. The comic, of course, not the movie, because that's not out yet. We also have a ton, absolute crap ton, of comics to talk about, so we are going to get to those as well. But as always, we like to talk about the news first, and to do that, I'm going to turn it over to Chris McFeely. What you got for us, sir?
Well, I got stuff. There's a lot of stuff. There's a fair bit of news this week, but the one I'm going to lead with is the one that I actually forgot about and had to be reminded about by Triplett, which is that Jon Favreau was opted out of directing Iron Man 3.
No.
Hmm. I'm really? Not sure what to make of that.
I can make of it that Marvel is a cheapskate, and that they're more concerned about their series of films than the individual ones. And that Jon Favreau got big boy pants between Iron Man 1 and now. So, I mean, he's got Cowboys and Aliens is going to be huge.
I still haven't watched that trailer.
I don't know if it's going to be huge or not.
I think it'll be decent. I mean,
I want to see it, but I don't know. I honestly don't know what in the hell it's about. You know,
well,
cowboys and aliens.
It's, you know,
it's James Bond and Indiana Jones in the West versus aliens. So that does sound awesome on paper.
I mean, you know? Yeah, everything that you just said is win. I mean, come on. Yeah. So, I mean, I haven't read the graphic novel. It is a graphic novel that it's based on. Correct. I'm correct.
I actually don't know.
I think so.
I think so.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it's, who knows, man. But it's got wacky elements. There's, like, the stranger that can't remember his past, and he's got, like, an alien device on his hand. And, I mean, the trailer looked pretty good, although it was kind of weird because I saw it in the theater when I went to see the most recent Harry Potter film. And, like, at the end, After the whole thing played, which was pretty dramatic, and everything got to the end, like where the big title book card came up and it said "Cowboys versus" or "Cowboys and Aliens," the entire audience erupted into laughter.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So I don't know what that means.
I thought that was the reaction a title like that is supposed to prompt.
I would think so, but I mean. The cover of the graphic novel is like a cowboy riding a horse pointing his six-shooter up into the air at an alien spaceship. So, I don't know. It's one of those things I think that on paper is a little bit different than when you put it at the title card in front of the film. But, I mean, you know, it looks pretty dramatic. It looks good. I mean, it's got a good cast, so.
Yeah.
But, you know, Jon Favreau.
Well, on the topic of Jon Favreau.
But I think he's just gotten bigger and he's not hurting for a film, and I think that he probably asked for more money, which he deserves, and you know, Marvel just can't really afford to give it.
Seems like I read something about him not being paid properly for the last two movies also.
I don't think that's got
something to do with it.
Well, yeah, I mean Marvel, I think that's been the complaint out of the Marvel Studios. They've been notoriously cheap as far as what they're willing to pay for production. So
Well, Iron Man 3 is far enough away that, as I've said before, I can't even think about anything beyond Thor right now, so.
No.
Well, I think the plan was Iron Man 3 was going to follow Avengers, so that gives you an idea how far that is ahead of us.
Yeah, because they haven't even done Avengers yet. Avengers has always been next year for, like, 2 years now, so. You know, I don't know. But,
well,
anyway.
Yeah, wait and see, I suppose. Disappointing all around, though, I would say. It's sad to lose Jon Favreau.
I think, yeah, I mean, it's not a loss for Jon Favreau. It's definitely a loss for us, I think, as a viewing audience. I think We're the ones that are losing out, to be honest.
Yeah, that's what I do. In other news, sticking with the other media news, word is that they might be making a Jessica Jones television series.
Wow.
Now, you'd be forgiven for forgetting who Jessica Jones is for all she's managed to do lately. That's Luke Cage's wife, if you're reading Avengers. She did used to headline her own series as a private detective. Two of her own series, actually. Formerly Alias and The Pulse. Of course, that's obviously... They can't call it Alias because...
That's what I was going to say. Why can't they call it Alias? It'd get ratings if they did.
Yeah. Apparently, the show is going to be called AKA Jessica Jones.
Ah.
What?
Reportedly, Twilight screenwriter Melissa Rosenberg is writing and producing the series, set for a fall 2008 premiere on ABC.
Wow.
And that's about all we know.
Huh. ABC. Yeah, that makes sense, because it's their station.
So, her comic was canceled, right? Or did Bendis just get tired of writing it? Or
oh, I don't know. The Alias ended... like at an end point.
Okay.
And then The Pulse launched immediately thereafter. So I think The Pulse was really an attempt to bring the character from the Max world into the mainstream Marvel universe.
And Pulse died pretty quick, didn't it?
Yeah, it died on its arse.
Yeah.
It had really, really good 6-part opening story. Then it just did a bunch of weird tie-ins, and I don't even remember what the final story arc of The Pulse was.
Yeah, I just remember the Green Goblin stuff.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, I remember that. That's about it.
Tie into Secret Wars, which was longer than half of Secret War. Secret War, you know, the Bendis miniseries. And I still don't know what the point of that tie-in was. Then there was a House of M one about bringing Hawkeye back, if I recall. And I don't remember what the hell it was. That died on its arse. And then she's just been Luke Cage's wife for a very long time since then.
So who thinks this would be a good idea for a TV show if it's kind of done, kind of mixed reaction, you know, for making money?
Nobody watches that anyway.
I say if they do it right and do it with the Max approach, then that'll be a good show.
You better have, like, Doctor Strange guest star in an episode, or else I'm not watching it.
Because that's the problem. I suppose you would have to hope that there will be maybe something like that, because it really could be anything, then, otherwise.
Yeah.
Without familiar Marvel characters that did decorate it, like Luke Cage and Ant-Man and whoever popped in and out of the storylines. But it's something else. In other news, Mark Bagley, Ultimate Spider-Man.
Hell
March
yes.
2011. Hell yeah.
So he's returning just to kill him off.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, he was there in the beginning, and he's coming back for the end.
To be honest, that is what some people have said. I've heard some people kicking that notion around that maybe they really will kill him and Bagley's back to put the end to it. But I can't imagine that. We have been instructed not to worry about David Letterman and Tara Pacelli, though, because they will be fine. They have huge plans for them, Bendis says. The current artist team.
Oh, right.
But hell's yeah, Bagley and Bendis. That's going to be good. Hope we see a sales spike out of that.
Yeah.
And then sticking with other comic book related news, probably the big news this week, comic book related, is the chain of new teasers Marvel's been releasing this week. Do You Fear? We've had one every day. We've had a Spider-Man-centric one, as he looks through a shop window. It seems to just be full of newspapers and TV programs talking about the economy. Do You Fear Tomorrow? We have Do You Fear What You Have Become? An image of Cyclops in Magneto's outfit. Do You Fear a Loss of Faith? Captain America kneels in front of a tattered American flag, his shield broken. Do You Fear Losing Control? The Incredible Hulk standing in front of dead bodies of Avengers. And Do You Fear Family Secrets with Odin towering over Thor and aiming his spear at his eye? And, yeah. So these obviously tie in with the fear-related teasers that we've been seeing in Marvel Comics the last couple of weeks. These all black pages with the single sentences of white type across the middle. which I'm not entirely clear if they're real quotes or not.
You know,
some do with fear.
I recall a few months ago when we were talking about Marvel, and they were entering the heroic age, and it was supposed to be this, like, new Silver Age for their comics, and it was supposed to be more semi-optimistic, more good stuff that we would hope for. And now all of this stuff is about fearing all kinds of horrible, terrible things. What happened to my hopeful, optimistic, heroic age?
Well, that was 2010.
Yeah.
Well,
that was, you know, heroic age. That was like 8 months ago.
But,
and this is, you know, so by the time whatever this is happens, that'll be a full year since we had a year of the heroic age.
Hey, you know, an age implies a decent amount of time, more so than a year.
This doesn't
like a
mean
philosophy.
That the ideals,
you know,
of the heroic age are going away.
Yeah, this just looks like they're kicking off like many stories in the big books. Doesn't mean that we're going to get like huge changes, even though, you know, Cyclops as Magneto will be pretty huge.
Well, obviously these are figurative. Rather than
right.
I mean, frankly, Cyclops has been moving in that direction for a while now.
God, I really need to read X-Men again. I have no idea what's going on.
I do not, care. I could not care less about the X-Men.
But so, like, that's Captain America, like Steve Rogers' Captain America. So does this mean something with Bucky's coming?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, this is so bizarre and not possible. I mean,
this is our big thing for next year. This is next year's event. This is what we're looking at here, surely.
We knew Odin was coming back. We knew there's going to be some shit going down with Odin, so we knew that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I look at this and I don't see nothing bad. I think it's kind of cool that they're teasing some stories. I just, you know, don't want to get anything like too crazy. You know, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to see like a shake up like on the Avengers again or something crazy like that. I like my Avengers books the way they are.
Crazy, like what, Iron Man dying or, you know.
Yeah.
Oh wait, that's gonna happen.
There is, I was just looking, it was quite different because I was looking up an image of it. We all remember the giant timeline we got in Avengers number 4, 5, 6, whatever it was. We know the one we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The big timeline. There is an entry on there, Man Without Fear. No, sorry, Fear Without Man.
Fear Ooh. Without Man?
Yes. So, perhaps this has something to do with it. And then Daredevil will come and save everybody.
Yeah, but it won't be like Daredevil or Deldor. It'll be
Black Panther.
Daredevil.
No, well, Black Panther's the man without fear now. So, like, Daredevil will just become fear without
yes.
man. And
well,
he'll be like,
he's going through his whole, what are they calling that? The road to.
I don't know. Daredevil reborn
or something
is about to happen.
Is the Matt Murdock thing now? So.
I just remember, maybe Mr. Fear is behind all of this, and they will need Daredevil to come and save them all.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's great. Is there
well,
any
yeah, that's that. Interesting. I think it's interesting anyway. You're filled with bile and hatred.
It's not bile and hatred. It's disappointment and sadness. It's like I was hoping for some more, you know.
As long as this doesn't say Civil War II anywhere in these ads, I'm on board.
It doesn't, you know? It doesn't yet, but I don't know.
Not yet.
It's just like, although I don't know. I was hoping for more, but we'll see. I'm not dissing it yet. It just kind of seems counter to what I thought they were doing. So it's a little paradigm shift for me because
they've done what they were doing.
Okay. So I heard age and I thought more time, but apparently I don't know how long an age is. So,
well, yeah, the age of Apocalypse didn't last that long.
Oh, well, there you go.
Just a couple of issues.
So, Anyway, so that's it. We got news, no news, that's it. No more
that's
news.
All the news okay. for this okay. week.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some comic books then, and of course we always start with Chris Triple.
Yay me. Okay. Woo. Let's see. We'll talk some Amazing Spider-Man number 650.
Ho, ho,
read that. Did you guys read it? Did both of you guys read
yes.
it?
Oh, yes, sir.
Buying and reading Spidey now. It's here in my heart.
Good.
Awesome.
Good stuff.
So you guys are on board now.
Oh,
so,
man.
Shoot. Well, it's basically just continues from the last issue. We've got a new Hobgoblin. And he's going to kill Spidey. Oh, my God.
Yep.
Well, and he's about to kill him. He's about to cut his head off or whatever with the flaming sword. And Spidey gets saved by Lady Gaga.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Okay, sorry.
It just explained a little bit more. He's about to be killed. He's in the think tank, and one of his co-workers realizes that Hobgoblin's sonic scream can maybe be, I guess, blocked if she has, like, a stronger signal pumping through the PAs. And she just randomly picks a song from her... from her playlist, and it's a Lady Gaga song. And Spidey's able to get up and get away from the flaming sword. And he makes the comment saying, "Did I just get saved by Lady Gaga? No offense, but can I have the nausea-inducing laughter back?"
Nice.
Yeah. So as the issue goes, you know, Hobgoblin, you know, gets away, of course, because we didn't expect him to, you know, lose that fast. He just showed up. Spidey runs into a situation where it looks like his identity is about to be revealed because, you know, hey, Spidey showed up at the think tank. You know, how would Spidey have gotten there so fast? Uh-oh. And he basically gets rid of his costume real quick before his coworkers comes and find him. And the way he's not got enough time to, you know, change his clothes and everything. So basically he formulates a lie where he likes to do all of his lab work, you know, without his clothes on. And he didn't hear all the alarms because of, obviously he likes to listen to music, you know, with his clothes off while he does his lab work.
But not just any music.
Yes.
He's listening to U2, which was, of course, tie-in to Turn Off
to
the
Musical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's pretty undeniable.
Yeah. Well, and Dan Slott even said that on his Twitter yesterday.
Oh, did he?
Oh, fair.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, poor bastard. They're not even giving him comps for the show. He's having to buy tickets for the show. It's like, don't they know
well,
he helped write Spider-Man? But whatever.
Exactly. But, you know, it's just, you know, funny little scene. Other than that, you know, the issue's just kind of nothing major like we've gotten in the last couple of issues. Like, nothing like, my God, you know, killing off the old Hobgoblin and giving us a new one. But it's, you know, still, you know, basic story. Hobgoblin returns what he stole from the think tank to Kingpin. Kingpin knows that this isn't the same Hobgoblin and decides that he's going to give him the job because he completed the task. Shoot, what else happened? Oh, you know, Phil Urich is the new Hobgoblin. He's, you know, he's doing his thing. He's been paid now, and he's kind of trying to woo Nora Winters, the reporter at the new Daily Bugle. And it's not really working, you know.
It's less than not working.
Yeah, less than not. It's kind of
pushing
her away. And Spidey decides that he wants to be a little bit more offensive, so he actually constructs himself a new Spider-Man costume so that he can fight Hobgoblins, Sonic Screaming stuff. So he basically gets Black Cat's help to help him sort of track down Hobgoblin and see if he can maybe go after him. But it turns out that the information that Black Cat gets, Hobgoblin allowed Spidey and Black Cat to have. He's actually kind of, you know, playing both sides, or he's doing something. Like he's basically turning Spider-Man and Black Cat on Kingpin. He wants to kind of, you know, I don't know exactly what he's doing. He's just being crazy.
Wants to, he's trying to, like, get more. I mean, he doesn't care about the stuff. I mean, the money so much, but he's interested in his rep. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's what is so interesting to me is because he
I mean, he's even got a flying device that records his crimes And that's how he got the video that he gave to Nora that showed the Hobgoblin breaking into the think tank. So he's, like, recording the stuff that he's doing, I guess, like you're saying, so he can, like, increase his rep.
It's just like this anti-Spider-Man thing. It's kind of interesting. I like it. It's like,
I hadn't thought about that. You're right, yeah.
And then you got, like, Spidey's suit, which is all, you know, neon green and black suit. And it's a stealth suit, so nobody
invisible.
Can see him.
It's invisible.
So I guess how many
you should
more
just wear that all the time now.
How many more Spidey suits are we going to get now? You think he's going to, like, make one for each occasion? He's basically Iron Man, and this is my space Spidey
suit. Dude, Hasbro will not be able to keep up with the toy line now.
Apparently, we are going to get a bunch of situational suits, though.
Yeah. And I don't hate it, because it goes with the plot. I mean, like, if it, like, came out of just, you know, left field or something, then it'd be really stupid. But, you know, he's working at the think tank. He's obviously going to use that to his advantage, because he's been using the same crappy equipment for, like, 30 years. It's about time that he upgraded it to some degree.
Yeah, now he can finally have that spider car and the, you know, stealth suit and all the cool shit with the water
the
guns and things.
Spider
like
jet and the hovercraft.
Yeah, and the four-wheeler, you know, all that stuff that Spider-Man would need.
All that wonderful stuff, yeah. And so, like, the issue basically ends with Black Cat and Spidey going, you know, to the Kingpin and saying that, you know, everything's going to be fine, and we've totally got the element of surprise. We're, you know, earlier in the issue, we know that we don't, because, you know, Hobgoblins set them all up. We're just going to, you know, I don't know, kill them or something when they get there. And that's basically how the issue ends. I mean, it's like I said, it's not any big stuff like we got in the last couple of issues. Just continuing the story, but still good stuff. Some good stuff in the issue. We also got a backup story, which goes back into the whole stuff with Scorpion, because, you know, Scorpion lost his suit. You got, you know, tore off of him, and he's having problems. His body's shutting down or something. And in the backup story, we find out that he... it's because he still got the experiment that turned him into the Scorpion. You know, whatever they did to him, it's still there. And the Venom symbiote was basically just, you know, kind of keeping him in check. And it's a short story, but it's basically leading into what looks like going to be some stuff where the Scorpion's going to be returning at some point, which is, like, the best news ever, because that's the one Spidey villain that they never should have got rid of. He should still be around. He should have been around back in the Gauntlet and stuff. But basically, it looks like Smythe is the guy who creates the Spider Slayers is going to be bringing him back, because he breaks him out.
Awesome! I'm totally behind that. That's like bringing Jonah Jameson's two weapons that he created against Spider-Man together. I mean, a year or two ago, like whenever the notion of Spider-Man 4 was still rolling around, it's like. And I would talk about it with people at work. Like I would say, you should either do the Lizard and Kraven, or you should do the Spider Slayers and the Scorpion and connect their origins. So
that would have been awesome.
So this seems to be the sort of the thematic link we're seeing here. They're both Jameson created, and I'm imagining we're going to get some kind of bitchin' badass cybernetic Scorpion out of this.
I mean, that might be, like, the next... And, like, once they get done with this initial Hobgoblin storyline, maybe we're getting Scorpion next. Can't wait. I think it'll be awesome. And that was Amazing Spider-Man. I mean, it was pretty good.
It's been good stuff.
Yeah. It's just continuing. I also read Brightest Day number 16. Did you guys read it?
Yeah.
I can't remember what happened. Was the last issue, was it the Martian Manhunter?
The Martian Manhunter.
Okay, yeah. So this was a lot better then.
Oh, it was a hell of a lot better. Which doesn't say much, but it was a hell of a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, the greatest issue of Brightest Day yet, but it was a whole lot better than the last issue. We basically just get a little bit more of the new Aqualad. We find out, you know, more about him, and we see more develop of him becoming a hero, you know, because he's kind of not right now.
His powers.
Finding out a little bit more about his powers. You know, it shows us a little bit about Deathstorm and what's going on with him.
Us Aqualad's full-blown origin.
Yes.
Yeah, we find out, you know, pretty much, you know, how Aqualad came into being. He was like an experiment, Is that what it was? He was like basically his mother was experimented on, and
we see very briefly. We see her being his mother being snatched out of a raft along by some. I presume they must be people from Zebel, the Atlantean other dimensional prison colony that Mera and her people come from.
And he's designed to be a way to open the prison or to close the prison. Is that right?
He has the ability to, the way that dimension works, because he was born in that, because he wasn't from there, but was like born there in the Bermuda Triangle, it altered him, was the implication that I got. Because he's human. I mean, he was born human.
Which I guess we should mention that the Bermuda Triangle is where the prison's at, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know if we've got that information before. I don't know if that was in previous issues or if this was the first one. But yeah, we find out more about that. And, you know, he finds another him and Aquaman find another one of those chests, and it kind of shoots the memories into him. It's like a recorded message for him, and it tells him about all this stuff and how he came to be. And in the chest is, hey, a Aqualad costume, and those weapons that he uses to make water weapons out of.
Yeah, because they explain
like
that,
the cartoon,
like the cartoon,
just like the
but
cartoon,
they
yeah.
they explain that the other Zebelians, whatever, they can't make the full water constructs like Mera can, so they have to have something to focus.
She's
it. So that's why he has that.
Are unique to them is how they explained it, right?
Right.
She's kind of like a freak or something,
So
and Aqualad and Aquaman kind of has a showdown. They have a big old fight because Aquaman says, we got to do this and this. And he says, no, I don't. And they just kind of have at it with each other, he calms down and, Aquaman kind of, tells him his origin. And it's like, hey, we're basically saying, hey, we're the same, and we got to put up with this and we got to do something about it. I'm paraphrasing it,
that's about paper. Right, though. We get our full page spread of the new Aqualad fully costumed out.
Yep.
So, I want to go back real quick though and mention something about the Deathstorm thing. That was awesome.
Yeah, it really was actually.
I think it shows. I mean, I think we've kind of known that Deathstorm is, just screwed up, like really, evil, like an embodiment of evil. And we get a full clue on how evil this dude is when he does the gun thing. Because he tells Stein and Jason's father that that of course if the host is destroyed, then it would kill him. So what is the father's first name? I can't remember.
I actually really don't know.
I'm looking at the issue.
I don't think they say his name.
Alvin.
Alvin
says, "Do it."
Okay.
Because Dine says, "Do it, Alvin, and may God have mercy on our souls."
So he tells Alvin, he's like, "Look, all you have to do is blow your own head off. I mean, you'll die, and so will Stein, and so will I. And you'll save the world. So, but can you do that? Would you really do that for him? Because you'd have to give up your own life."
He picks up the gun.
And puts it to his head, and you're like, oh, man, he's really going to do it. And he's like, and he does. He pulls the trigger. And then Deathstorm's like, oh, I forgot to put bullets in the gun. Oh, well, sorry. Suck it.
Yeah.
I mean, just evil. Evil, evil.
I love that panel of the gun appearing on the table as well.
Yes.
Almost computer-generated.
I don't know if it is. Yeah. It probably is more so in the paint than the drawing. I don't know.
No, but I don't think it is. It's just the really stark blacks and bright white silvers they've used on it.
Yeah.
Just really of the completely silent panel. It's awesome.
Yeah, it is a great. I mean, just this whole sequence is really, really interesting. And Deathstorm is totally creepy. Great villain. Great villain so far, but.
Smelling us Firestorm centric next issue, perhaps.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Especially after the end of this issue, where we've got Firestorm, which in previous issues is he's having some problems, losing control of his powers, so he goes to the Justice League to get some help. And yeah, at the end of this issue, it looks like he can't control it. Him and the two guys inside of him are like arguing, and that's like what's causing the problems with their powers. I think is how it was explained in previous issues. And it basically looks like they explode at the end of the issue, and they think that they've destroyed the universe.
Yeah. They've also like they're basically like a little bit different. Like they're just on fire. It's not like the full firestorm.
The firestorm elemental.
Yeah, like the fire elemental almost. Yeah. So.
So if they've destroyed the universe, why is there a next issue?
That's a good question.
So they obviously either they've destroyed the universe and they've gotten so powerful they're just gonna like fix it in the next issue,
right?
Or they didn't, and like you said, next issue is a firestorm centric issue, and we're gonna find out what's going on with those guys.
I hope maybe if we see more death. Next issue, we'll find out who wants the lantern as well.
Yeah, because there is that. I mean, there's someone even more badass that Deathstorm is working for. So you're like, ah, oh, this is incredible. This Brightest Day series continues to confound me, though. Because, I mean, this is like a decent issue. It's not the best issue that's come out of it. But you have last issue, which was so terrible. And then this is better. And then, I mean, it is really just all over the place.
This one's pretty good. I like this one better than most issues. I don't think it's been my favorite one, but it was pretty good. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah. But it's...
I mean, it's a lot of exposition, you know? So.
Yeah. This series still just does not know what it is, though. It's so weird. Anyway.
So we might get, like, a bad issue next issue. It might be, like, another Martian Manhunter. It might be, like, the Firestorm version of Martian Manhunter, where, like, we see his made-up...
Is it time to go back to Boston, though? I don't know.
Or the
Hawks. We've got to go back to them.
We don't. We can just let them.
No, we don't.
Maybe just let them do whatever. Worry about it later.
The last we left them, they were still strapped to that dimensional gateway thing.
They're so. On
no, they appeared on the Zamaron last
Zamaron,
year. Zamaron,
yeah,
they
yeah.
Through
yeah.
The gate.
Yeah. So.
So we might see them in Green Lantern, huh?
Maybe.
Maybe. Nah, probably not.
Probably not.
But yeah, that was it for me, except for Green Lantern, which we're saving for the end.
Excellent. All right, McFeely.
Yeah.
Right. Let's see. Avengers Academy. I have Avengers Academy. I have the best Avengers book here. Well, this is the best of the four Avengers books.
So it's better than the Pet Avengers?
Don't knock the Pet Avengers, but
I'm not knocking the Pet Avengers.
No, it's like this is always what I call the best Avengers book, but it's so different from the other three Avengers books that I usually don't count it whenever I'm talking about the best. When I say New Avengers is the best, but this is a Hank Pym centric issue, which is about bringing him back as Giant Man. Is it because Giant Man is in the Avengers cartoon? Is it because he's going to be Giant Man? No, Giant Man's not in the film, so maybe it is just down to the cartoon, because the costume's rather similar.
Yep.
But it's kind of irrelevant. No, this is... probably should just draw attention to this. This issue is, in the inside, incorrectly attributed to the regular Academy artist Mike McCone. This issue is actually drawn by Tom Rainey. It says on the inside, Mike McCone. And I was just spent the whole issue looking at it going, that doesn't look like... Oh, sneezes. So, Hank Pym-centric issue, kicking off with him looking over Tigra's baby. Now, if you read Avengers Academy, you'll remember that Tigra has had a baby by... Tigra had a baby? By the Skrull that was impersonating Hank Pym.
Huh.
Yes, it was an early Mighty Avengers issue, wherever we saw Tigra and Pym copping off. And later that Pym turned out to be a Skrull, and then Tigra had revealed Tigra was pregnant. Now, it didn't get brought up for an awfully long time, because she was focused on revenge against the Hood. But in the final issue of Avengers Academy, it was basically a case of, hey, here's my kid. I had him like a while ago. No cats only are pregnant for 2 months.
So, like, is the baby a cat person too? I mean, looks like a cat.
The baby is a little cat person. But it turns out in the he studies him, and it turns out that there's no Skrull DNA in the baby because, as we know, the Skrulls during the Secret Invasion were using they had turned themselves into the people they were impersonating on a molecular, mental, and physical level. So technically speaking, this baby is half Hank Pym's.
Huh.
So that's an awkward scenario to have to teach in. And yes, it's an awkward first couple of pages. And Hank, the prospect of family is not a good one to Hank because, well, it leads him to just recap his past for us and his history with Jan. But it turns out, again, if you were reading The Mighty Avengers, you would know that the Wasp, who was last seen being teleported away by Thor whenever she was poised to explode or something at the end of Secret Invasion, because who really knows what was going on, had found her in the, I believe it was called the Overspace. It's like the counterpart to the Microverse, like the Microverse you as mentioned back is shrinking. The Oververse or the Macroverse or whatever it's called is the dimension you access through growing. This is where the Wasp has been floating, her mind scattered to the corners of this dimension, but some aspect of her physical form there, and the Infinite Avengers mansion in which Mighty Avengers is set and which Avengers Academy here is set, the infinite ongoing sub-dimensional base that they use is in fact her own body, like a network of corridors and everything, like arteries and veins right through this macrocosmic body that's holding Wasp together on every level. And Hank has found a way to bring her back.
Yay!
Wow.
Hooray!
Yeah, I want some Wasp in my Avengers again, because I've been liking Wasp a lot on the cartoon.
Yeah, I am really liking the Wasp in the cartoon, and it is making me miss her in the comics.
Yeah,
I mean, Hank is giving up the name. He's giving up the Wasp code name because that was just that was damaged severely. So he wants to go back to being. And to be fair, I mean, there isn't a lot of the kids in this one. They are they're what's the word? Escorting the captive absorbing man back to prison, but he breaks out in the course of the transit, and a huge old fight breaks out. And it essentially comes down to Giant Man versus Giant Absorbing Man fighting in the middle of New York, rather awesomely.
Nice.
Like, they fight Giant, and then, like, they're about to topple over and destroy a building, and Pym shrinks them into the microverse before anything can happen, you know? And then, the Absorbing Man gets a hold of Pym, gets his shrinking powers, and grows them up big again, but then Hank just pushes them and pushes them and pushes them until they grow out of reality and into the realms above, where the Absorbing Man finds himself faced with chaos and order and the Living Tribunal and the In-Betweener, and just loses his shit completely.
Wow. Did Jim Starlin write this issue?
It is a little bit like that. Pym shrinks them back down to normal space. Pym has Absorbing Man give powers so that he shrinks them back to normal space, and that's him dealt with. But the experience makes him realize what has happened to Jan's mind, and the fact is he's forced to accept that maybe she isn't ready to come back. He needs her back more than she may be physically be able to come back, and he's kind of forced to recognize that. But then there's this ending in which it turns out, I mean, you know, we know the central thing about Avengers Academy is that our six characters are the damaged ones. They have specifically been selected, although the instructors haven't told them and don't realize that they've found out on their own, that they are not because they are the most promising superhumans, but the ones who have the most potential to become villains because of all the horrible things that have been done to them. But while Reptile has just appeared like a little unbalanced, a little dogmatic, Mattel, Hazmat, Stryker, and Finesse all really feel like they could tip over to the dark side. But not Veil, not our first character, not the first issue POV character, who has just seemed a little bit luckless in her scenario, in her situation. I've never felt of her as a villain. And then at the end of this issue, as Hank shuts down the view screen showing Jan and leaves the room, the mists coalesce and Vale appears. It turns out Vale has been listening to him. And the final panel is as Vale reaches out to the lever of the view screen. I'm like, what is going on there, Vale? Don't be doing that. You're the good one.
Oh. Wow.
So,
yeah. Everybody should really read Avengers. If you're only reading one Avengers book, it really should be Academy, as far as I'm concerned.
I would like to read Academy. I just don't need another book.
Yeah,
well, I think I'll live through you.
If the trade, how's that?
Well, yeah, definitely pick the train up. But this is the thing. This is not Avengers. This is not New Avengers. This is not a book where you will pick up the first trade and it will be about a big fight with Agamotto or a battle through time against Kang. This is one where you will pick the trade up and you will get 5 or 6 one- and two-part stories which center on individual characters. This is a comic written like that. This is not a Bendis. But I mean, Avengers Academy exemplifies to me, much like Hickman's Fantastic Four, this have in great capacity. But it's subplotting single issue by multi part back and forth multi focus approach definitely turns me on about it. And it's something I get from Fantastic Four as well. I just think that those two books like really stand out as the beacons of what I want to be. It's a book that I've said before about Morrison's Batman, but on a lesser scale, because it's less to do with mind bending and more to do with just the way the story is structured. It's a book that reads better in individual format month on month than I can than I would have to imagine a trade would. So, you could read it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep trying to talk me into it. Maybe
yeah.
I will.
Yeah. Well, keep working on it.
Okay. Issue after next. Taskmaster's in it.
Aw, damn you. Damn you all to hell.
Because if you remember, I haven't talked about it recently, but Finesse, the polymath, the sociopathic polymath, who is a member of the Academy, it was pointed out in a previous issue that her powers are very similar to the Taskmaster's. Now, they can't define anything genetically yet because they have no genetic material, but he's in it until they choose to.
Oh. Crap.
Yeah. So maybe get that one issue, see what you think.
Yeah.
Maybe hang around when you've read it.
Well, all right.
Taskmaster. So, the other thing that I have, JD, that you should specifically be reading, because I just target you,
I know.
Is the second issue of the Loki miniseries. I talked about the first issue of this a long time ago. I don't think this is bi-monthly, but it feels like it's been longer than a month since this was out. And I can't talk about this to any great extent, because this is essentially a storybook version, or a comic book version, of the story from Greek myth of how Loki, finds out about the coming of Ragnarok, and that Baldur dying will set it off, and the expecting of the promises from all of creation that they'll never harm Baldur, and except but through Loki's machinations, Mistletoe was left out of the equation, and Baldur dies. Because of that,
that's a great story.
Yeah, and that is simply this issue. Whereas last issue was a telling of the myth where Loki tricked the dwarves into forging weapons that he would present to Odin as gifts. It was bookended by a scene of Loki hiding on Earth, like in the one blind spot on Earth away from Odin's wrath until Thor came for him because he had killed Baldur. So there was the overtone to that Loki had no idea of any of this. And the idea that they were trapped by destiny. and made me wonder if there was anything to do with the cyclical Ragnarok or just the idea that these myths are already writ and they can't be escaped. But those there's none of those in this issue, which struck me as a little bit surprising. But obviously, this comes before those because this is Loki actually causing his death. Although at this point in this particular issue, they don't know that Loki's responsible for it. But yeah, it's all very very high myth. It's very just straight up mythological stuff. And you know, I keep telling you to read these things.
Okay, well, there's so many Thor. It's like I can't. I was That's true. Confused.
There is a lot of this like... is the only. Yeah, Thor outside of the main ongoing series that I have bothered to pick up.
So, I mean, this is the Thor, what's it called again? So that I know when
just,
I go...
It's just called Loki.
Loki. Okay. I will pick it up.
I mean, you've got Thor the Mighty Avenger. That's been cancelled. And that's sad because that was a good book. It was a good, lighthearted book that had its fans, but I've just always said that it was the weird book, that there was no real clear reason for existing. So, unfortunately, it's gone. That's why. And then you had a lot of miniseries. You had First Thunder, Thor Asgard, Loki, Warriors 3. You got Ultimate Thor. There's a one-shot called The Wolves of the North. There's the Iron Man crossover miniseries. So there's a lot of Thor at the minute. And it's the only one I'm reading, but it is well worth reading. If you like your myth. I mean, it's not going to suddenly turn you on to the world of Thor. If myth and Warriors is not going to turn you on to it, because it is just a fairly straight retelling of the myth. But, you know, if you enjoy that sort of thing, it's your alley. You know, there's some great bits in here. Like, they're the scenes that... The myth involves the gods extracting promises from everything in the world, in creation, that it will never harm Baldur, which is one of those mythological things. Like, you know, how does a rock promise you anything? I remember even the original 80s in the handbook to the Marvel Universe, it just includes a footnote in Baldur's entry, which mentions that the story is told as if these things were animate, and they're not entirely sure how that fits in with the larger cosmology. But the way it's told is just in a couple of panels here. And it reminds me a little bit of Thor's Ragnarok, Avengers Disassembled story, because you get the feeling that this is a story that you are being told. And it's funny, I was having a conversation with a customer, actually, talking about old school narrative thought bubbles and the caption boxes that... was like the editor's voice leading you through a story, addressing the reader directly, you know, devices like that. And I, while thought bubbles, I think, still have their place, and I think they're seeing some use in Spidey, actually, the idea of the narration box talking to you and leading you through the comic, I think, is one that is better left in the past. But this is one of these instances where they're able to take the idea and make it work as it is. The idea of being a story is at the heart of the way the story is told, and so it's presented as if it's something that some force, some voice from on high is reading out. And in this particular instance, the captions read, "And in a way that can only happen in these kinds of stories, that is what happened all through the Nine Realms. Fire swore an oath to Frigga, the mountains swore an oath to Odin, all the animals swore their loyalty to Thor, the rivers and lakes swore to Heimdall. We will never drown Baldur the Good, never, and on, all the gods." And you see all these things, just perfectly square little panels, like fire blazing in front of Frigga, and like the vaguest hint of a pair of eyes and maybe a mouth in the flames, and a mountain with just a few clefts in it that might be eyes looking out at Odin on the opposite side of the ridge. Stuff like that. And yeah, so this is good stuff. If you like your myths, this is highly enjoyable.
Loki. Okay. I'm going to pick
Loki.
Cool.
And I also have, which I'm not going to talk about to any great extent, Strange Tales 2, number 3, the final issue of Marvel's three-issue miniseries about alternative creators doing comedic, unusual, independent takes on the various Marvel characters. There was another one in here from the creator of the Perry Bible Fellowship, which I talked about in the first issue. Let me just do a quick refresh of my memory and see what I have in this issue. Terry Moore of Echo and Perfect Strangers. He does a funny story about how Thor decided to put a strap on Mjolnir. An awesome Silver Surfer four-pager by, I don't know the guess, James Stokes. It's artistic, like, it's gorgeous. It presents Galactus as this huge biomechanical force as he consumes a Skrull planet, and the Silver Surfer finds three Skrulls just playing cards in the face of uncreation and decides to sit down and join them in their last moments. A rather uninteresting US agent story. A great Machine Man, Ectoplasmic and Mysterious Occurrences Investigator story by Tim Hamilton, in which he investigates ghosts and vampires and things, and all throughout it talks about how horrible it is to not be human, but how he couldn't possibly comprehend that fact because he's not. I have no tear ducts, but I must cry.
Wow. That's deep.
There's a good one called Rogue Gets in Trouble when she breaks a vase while dancing to her iPod, and she absorbs the cuteness of a passing kitten in order to get out of trouble with Professor X.
What?
It's like Professor X hears the crash. My favorite vase! Who did this? And he just does his telepathy anyway. It was Rogue! And Rogue just finds a cat, grabs it, and absorbs its powers of cuteness. And he's like, oh, Rogue, how can I stay mad at you?
Oh.
Can he just, like, touch his bald head and absorb his mind and he just forget anyway?
And then there was a rather strange story about Wood God by Dean Haspiel. Artistically, a really great story about Heroes for Hire, where some kids find his number and ring him up, and he just causes a lot of trouble. But just, like, artistically, it's pretty freaking gorgeous. A really dark story called Young People about Spider-Man, Jubilee, and Iceman, in which Jubilee accidentally melts Iceman with her fireworks powers, and then she and Spider-Man are like, oh my god, no, what are we gonna do? We killed him!
What?
Wow.
It's really dark. And then a fun little story about Reed Richards being set before they were the Fantastic Four, Ben Grimm setting Reed up on a date with his girlfriend's nerdy roommate, and how it actually goes really well, but just by, like, the vagaries of life, they wind up never getting together. It's just it's a funny, slightly poignant little story. You know, it's like when she comes knocking on the door for Reed, and Victor answers it, and it goes, "Who dares disturb Doom?" My simpleton awesome. Of a roommate is probably she asks where Reed is. My simpleton of a roommate is probably at the sporting arena cheering on his boyfriend Grimm. Those two never ask if Doom wants to see a game. And there's the rather cute little Spider-Man story. Another funny from the Perry Bible Ship fellow, Perry Bible Fellowship guy. And one that actually really took me by surprise was the last strip in there is written by Harvey Pekar, who died earlier this year, and it's a story about how Harvey it's called Harvey Pekar meets the Thing, because they used to go to Hebrew school together. And Ben's thinking about when he gets out of the superhero game, he maybe wants to go make it like Harvey did, and he just tries to solicit some advice from him. It's a very traditionally American Splendor, Harvey Pekar kind of story, and the issue's dedicated to Pekar.
Oh, wow.
So, again, overall, as with every issue of Strange Tales, there are a couple of misses, but there are always... this probably has the lowest ratio of... or the best ratio of... It's mostly all good and not many misses at all. So, if you're interested in something like unusual, you want a different take on something, you can pick up any issue of Strange Tales. There's no continuing stories or anything. If you want to just check out something different, give Strange Tales a look. And I'm sure the hardcover will be out soon. I'm sure it'll be a hardcover because of just how simply unusual it is. They'll kick it off with that. It's absolutely not for everybody. But if you just feel like you want a taste of something different,
some never wases or never could be's or never will be ideas and looks at characters. Strange Tales is I really enjoy it, and I hope to see Marvel revisit it with regularity, maybe once a year, do a set like this, and something similar to Girl Comics, where they just had the female creative teams do their short stories about different characters, humorous, alternative, straight. Earlier this year, I want to support things like that, different things. So yeah, Strange Tales, worth your time.
Cool.
And that's me. No graphic novels again this week. I have been tired. Well, I finished Classic G.I. Joe Volume 9, but you can't really talk about that. It was pretty good.
Huh.
That's all.
Okay.
Well, that's cool. Good.
Okay, well, I guess that's me then. Let's see. For some reason, I'm still reading Time Master's Vanishing Point.
Yes.
Probably because it's Booster and I can't help myself.
I don't know. What you were talking about before makes it sound pretty awesome. If there's like a corpse in it and they got to carry the corpse around.
Something like that.
Imagine it's more like an empty suit.
Well, we get the origin of Vanishing Point at the beginning of this, so that's kind of interesting. That Booster actually created Vanishing Point, so as a hiding place for his family. Because they were starting to get hunted down, and he has this big speech to young Rip to, you know, of course, never reveal his identity to anyone, because if they knew who he was, then that would really put him in a bind. And of course, when we last left all of these heroes, they were tumbling through a time hole thing that only, you know, Hal Jordan could get them out of with his green ring, so they do that, and the bad guy's gone. There's a lot of crap in this. basically, this is a lot of boring, weird nonsense. There is even a half-page panel, I shit you not, of Green Lantern, Booster, Superman, and Rip walking away from an explosion.
Nice.
I mean, if one of them didn't have a shirt on, it could have been that Pat Lee. Seriously, I kid you not. But yeah, we figure out that whoever's been talking to Supernova is their spouse. Although I'm assuming it's a dude. It's built like a dude, so I mean it's his wife, I would assume, but I don't know. So that still doesn't make any sense. Black Beetle, of course.
No, we don't know who's under the Supernova mask right now, do we?
Correct. We don't
so that is no less than two masked mystery men waltzing around in the pages of this book.
Right, because we still have no idea who Black Beetle is.
Yeah.
That is still a mystery. And then we also don't know who this version of Supernova is. So, and, of course, he's hanging out with, I can't remember their actual names, but it's the guy that in another universe turned into Wave Rider. And they dig up Wave Rider's corpse, and Black Beetle then uses that to be more powerful, because if he holds on to that, then...
Wibbly wobbly, timey wimey.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyway, they save the world from the made-up character that we were introduced to three issues ago, and now made them completely irrelevant. And for some reason, at the end of the issue, Professor Zoom shows up. So,
woo! He was on the cover.
Yep, he was on the cover, and he shows up in the last panel. Why? No idea. Doesn't make any sense. Doesn't fit into the story. They try to go back to do this. Now, keep in mind, the entire point of this whole thing is to find Batman, who's been back for a month and a half.
Yeah.
So they're a little bit behind. For being people that travel through time, they're a little bit late. So, I will buy the last issue because I bought the others, and I might as well. But that was 5, and there's still one more to go. So, next month will be the conclusion of Vanishing Point, searching for Batman, and he'll have been back 2.5 months.
And see, we'll find out that it's not finding Batman. It's that journey and how they all learn from each other while on the journey.
Well, we were kind of talking about this before the show, I mean, this particular issue, McFeely and I were, and I kind of get the feeling that I think it was a bit of a bait and switch to say that this was the search for Batman. I think this has more to do with Jurgens getting kind of a miniseries to tie up some of the loose ends from his run on Booster. And so, you know, I don't know. I mean, with Zoom coming in, that's potential to tie back into some of the maybe the Brightest Day stuff with Flash, but I don't know. That could just be.
That's always the thing about the Reverse Flash, though. You never know, or the Flash indeed, you never know when he's from. This may well be where the Reverse Flash has run off to after the end of Flash from last week. Maybe that's why this is so late.
Because awesome.
They had that Flash to come out so they could show him getting away so he could shoot off to be in this. Yep. Maybe this
there you go.
Flashpoint. I rather doubt it somehow.
That sounds very organized and put together, and that's not really what we've been used to off of this particular series. So.
I think it would be awesome if the last issue says read a Return of Bruce Wayne number 6 before you read this issue. I think that would be awesome.
God.
Because I mean, ultimately, it's going to have to end with them going back to issue 2 of Return of Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, because essentially the
time machine thing and everything.
Yeah. Okay, so anyway, on to other stuff that's not necessarily better, but is different, which is Emerald Warriors. I'm still buying this series, and I don't know why.
I have to be honest with you now. I haven't even flipped through this, so I really don't know.
Oh, my God. So, at the last issue, our Green Lantern incursion into the Unknown Sector team plus one Red Lantern were arrested by a group of Green Lanterns, and you figure out why. It's because this guy that has the enormous telepathic powers has them convinced that they have captured Yellow Lanterns. And amongst themselves, they actually decide that they should obey the first law and kill them. And when they're about to do that, Guy, you know, breaks out of the little prison that they have them in and starts fighting them. And our Red Lantern actually harms one of these Green Lanterns. And then he finally comes to his senses and realizes that there are other Green Lanterns. So Guy says, well, hey, that's all we got to do is beat the snot out of them. Because once we've hurt them, they'll realize that we're cool, which they proceed to do. Wow. But our big mind-controlling guy then has them blow all their heads off. So they all die. So
okay.
It seems kind of pointless. Other than Guy is able to find one of the rings and get a lock on where that guy is. So that's pretty much most of the value, other than we get a flashback at the end in which Guy talks about how he's been, of course, still sort of infected by the Red Lantern stuff. And before he left, he had like a Red Lantern construct of an image of the future. And there's this huge, huge page spread of the vision, I guess, if you'd will. There's all kinds of stuff on here. There's the guy that was Ion, I can't remember his name at the moment. There's our mind control guy with the big sword, the mysterious chained guardian, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. The butcher, all of the other entities are on here, and there is one specific image of a guy fighting. The other Green Lantern, but not Hal. I can't remember his name. Anyway, sorry, I'm sick, brain is not working. So, who am I talking about? The other Green Lantern?
What? I've not read it, I told you.
Okay.
I'm having trouble focusing on this summary,
Brian,
man. This book is
Brian's
dull.
Favorite Green Lantern.
Oh, Kyle.
Kyle, thank you.
Oh, hey. Kyle, oh, jeez, okay. I thought you were talking about one of them with the crazy
alien. No, the green...
You can't
Green
really
Lantern.
Just
the
say
important
the
Green Lantern.
Green
the yeah. important Green Lantern. We only care about the human Green Lanterns. Okay.
Hey, anyway. Hi. Tomar Ray would have you. Don't be speaking
ill. We only care about the human Green Lanterns. Anyway, so that's the long and short of this. Again, I'm still reading it. I don't know why. Because it's really slow.
I wonder what the sales are like on that book.
I don't know. It's really slow, though. The story is not moving as quickly or as interestingly as I hoped. I may drop this. I don't feel like I'm getting a lot out of it.
So yeah, my Green Lantern's good with Core and Green Lantern.
So, the best thing of the stuff that is stuff that I'm talking about is Batman and Robin. And that doesn't say a lot. I realized I left myself with all the crap.
Sorry. I should have read something that was crap, but I didn't.
Yeah, see? What's up with that, man? I need to read some not good stuff.
Yeah.
So, basically, this is part two of this three-part, the Sum of Her Parts series, which is the After Morrison Batman and Robin. The Batman and Robin stuff was fine. Otherwise, most of this issue is just an origin story for Absence. Basically, her origin is that she has a medical condition that she didn't even know about that they call...
Is it hole in the head syndrome?
Dandy Walker syndrome. I don't even. Okay. I doubt this is legit, but well, that's what they called
it. You keep talking. I'm gonna go look it up.
Essentially, what it is that her brain, the middle of her skull is hollow, right? Oh. So her brain is like around the outside of her skull. So when she got shot,
this is a real thing.
Wow, I'm actually not really surprised by that because I
all carved down.
So, but anyway,
I imagine based on what I'm reading here that it leaves you a little bit more physically impaired than this character appears to have been. Regardless of having a head blown through, you know, she has this hole in her head, so when she gets shot, the bullet just went right through because she has an emptiness in the middle of her head. But, you know, just based on what I'm reading here, you probably would have been able to tell.
Well, and there's a combination of things, because it's not just that. It was, like, the chemicals in the river interacted with it, and so that's, like, part of what kept her from having, like, a huge infection, and it also, like, increased her intelligence.
Chemicals in the river, how 1960s is that?
I am telling you, this is amazing. Like, this is a complete retro Batman villain origin story. Like, it does not get more retro than, first of all, a character that has a hole in their head created by both chemicals and a weird medical condition, and now they're super intelligent and really pissed off crazy at Batman.
Did she get shot near the Ace chemical plant too?
Probably.
just to make sure.
Now, I do have to say, though, that, like, you know, as we know, I try to champion the feminist cause whenever I can. It does seem a bit contrived, because this character is supposed to be, like, really rich, like, actually richer than Bruce. And yet, the whole point of this is that she's really torn up that Bruce didn't, like, love her and, like, wasn't at, like, her funeral and stuff. So it does seem a bit, like, really? Like, it hurt that bad, you know, that you did all of this, really? And, I mean, like, it was weeks after, like, their, like, third date or whatever, and she's still all torn about it up on the boat. It's just like, really? Like, this woman has nothing better in her life than worrying about whether or not Bruce Wayne liked her? Ugh. Anyway.
Well, she's got a hole in her head.
Well, now she does, but that was before she had the hole. Now she has the hole in her head.
To match the one in her heart.
Yes. Well, and that's, of course, the whole thing. They're calling her Absence, I guess, is what they're calling this character, and it's all about what's missing, you know, like Bruce was missing from
have we had
life.
The obligatory absence makes the heart grow fonder joke yet?
No, I don't think so. But
wait for that. That'll be the punchline of issue three, third part.
Yeah. but at one point she's trying
put
to get
money
like,
down on it. No, all the listeners heard it.
There is an interesting moment where she talks about like trying to kill this Batman because he doesn't really matter because there's so many others now. And she knows that he's an employee of Bruce, so, you know, she said it doesn't matter whether or not it was Robin or Batman that lives, just to get her message back to him, which is basically that she's heartbroken. So, I don't know. I mean, as a comic, I don't know that it's that great. I mean, like I said, most of this issue was that little bit of origin story. There, it also seems that she's now going to be targeting Bruce's other girlfriends. And she shows up at the end with more of, like, an actual costume on, which seems to have, like, I don't know, it seems to have, like, outlines with missing bits out of the middle, which is, you know, whatever, it's absence, that's what she's supposed to be. But the best part is she walks in on Vicky Vale, and she says, she's, Vicky says something about, all the lights go out, or all the power goes out, or something like that. And then, Absence comes in and says something snarky or something, but she's holding in one hand an enormous pair of stainless steel scissors, and in the other hand she's got a bag marked girlfriend body parts, and it's dripping with blood. And the next issue is nothing in particular. So that is also not fantastic, but not bad. I mean, I'll be interested to see. I'm going to keep reading that just because I still like the Dick and Damian portrayals. But, Absence is just too, like I said, it's too perfect. It is so classic Batman villain origin story. It's always a thing where it's like, how do you make up a new villain? And, you know, the modern age is always, it always just seems like a little too complicated, or, you know, it's like you fear going too kitschy or too, you know, wacky. And this was like no fear at all. It's like, nah, girl has a hole in her head. What?
Oh, she's no KG beast.
No.
Paul Cornell is doing a lot of wacky stuff like that, like over in Knight and Squire as well.
Cool. So it's great. I kind of like it, actually. I have to say, I've thought about that issue a lot over the last couple of days, just because it did. It really kind of got me giggling a little bit, just because it's so wacky. Anyway, so there you go. So there's my three. So now is the time, gentlemen. Now we can talk about Green Lantern.
Oh, damn. Oh, yeah. To be precise, the last page thereof.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, the last page of the last couple of issues has been really good stuff. So, McPhee, I'm going to set you loose on this one.
Well, no, you have it in front of you, which I don't. So tell us about it first.
Okay, well, let's see. Where do we start off with? We start off with a backstory getting into the opening panel, talking about where the battle with Necron and the appearance of the entities on Earth and in conjunction with the White Lantern, and then how those entities have continued to take over people. You know, they like to be in people. They feel warm and cozy when they're in a person. So
that's dead.
You know. Yeah. Anyway, and the latest person to get to pick up a an external entity would be Flash, who got to pick up Parallax. So there's a whole sequence of Flash beating the dog snot out of Hal.
Yeah.
As Parallax. A lot of dialogue between the two is as Hal sort of talks about Parallax, and they basically start blaming each other or trying to explain to each other that it's really the other that's afraid, and which is all kind of strange. But I don't know. Hal makes a whole speech about what is it? It's Parallax that talks about the time travel.
Yeah, Parallax mentions that, you know, Barry Allen's favorite book was The Time Machine. Is that
what? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And he landed him a copy of it, and like Barry like read it so much that it was like the cover was worn, and Hal, I don't think, ever actually read it or something.
Yeah, he makes it he saw the movie.
Yeah, he says he waited till he saw the movies, but he did.
Yeah.
And he like just has this commentary about it, and it's like he's kind of getting inside Hal's head, almost convincing him that, you know, Barry's almost in control again or something. And he says, "I've been talking to the Speed Force," and he says, "What does he say?" He says, And with lightning around us, with Parallax power, I can actually talk to the intradimensional energy that makes me the fastest man alive, the Speed Force, and then he makes a lightning bolt hit him. You know?
Yeah. But, you know, so anyway, there's some back and forth where Parallax goes to Hal basically tells him, he's like, look, I'm what you want, why don't you come get me? And, of course, that's exactly what Parallax wants, but it is not what our chained fiend guy does. Of which, there's an interesting moment early in here when Hal says he looks like a guardian, which really pisses him off. Yeah. He got really
mad. He says,
I'm
not a guardian.
I am not a guardian. And so there's a whole discussion about the emotional nature of the, or non-emotional nature thereof, of the rest of the Guardians. And then everybody starts to try to attack the chained guy here, including the Blue Lanterns, and it's everybody trying to pull in all of their powers. Best part is when Larfleeze makes an enormous mace, and he's trying to get the guy to tell him where his lantern is.
Yeah.
He says, tell me before I steal your eyes from their sockets.
Yeah.
Smashes him with the mace. It's awesome. There is a side post here, which I thought was kind of weird and interesting, where, you know, again, Atrocitus and Sinestro are out looking for the Butcher. And they're sort of fighting, semi-holding back a crowd. And one of the Sinestro Corps people informs Sinestro that, of course, something that has been known for the last couple of issues, which is that his daughter was kidnapped by the Weaponer. And Sinestro has not given two shits about this.
Nope.
And for some reason, there's something that he says that tips him off. He says, you know,
he says the Weaponer is demanding your presence or he'll kill her. And I think that's what sets him
off. Oh, yeah, because he repeats it. He says, demanding my presence.
Yeah.
Oh, Sinestro will not have any truck with that.
Yeah, I think that's like that's the word of the thing. It's like when he's like, oh, you demand me to be there? Well, how about I come there and whoop your ass?
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, so Sinestro just leaves, doesn't tell Atrocitus where he's going. So then back on the ranch, really interesting, the compassion entity is tapping into the other surrounding rings, and he has, like, the tentacles, and those tentacle arms become constructs of the other emotional spectrums, and he uses it to start to pull Parallax out of the Flash, and, it's at that point that the that our little chained guy then turns around and uses the willpower chains that, because some of his chains he's actually getting from the entities that he's controlling, and since he has willpower, he can use that to exert the will over the other entities, and he uses it to pull Arda and then the Indigo and then also take back over Parallax and then takes control of those entities again.
And, I like the image of him basically having the chains and having all the entities on a leash like they're these mad dogs. I think that's kind of neat looking.
Yes, you know? like he's controlling that. Yeah, yeah, it's awesome. So, so then Hal asks him again, he says, who are you? He says, my identity is not a secret. He says, why are you wearing bandages? Is that Malthusian evolution tapestries designed to regenerate my body, which was destroyed by the Guardians so many times? The Guardians, they call me out. Not only because I tried to discover the secrets of creation, but because I felt joy in doing so. They labeled me Apara and thought me imprisoned forever.
Then we get that big reveal at
the
last.
Big reveal. We finally figure out who he is. Are we going to say this?
I think we have to at this point.
I think we have to.
Spoilers, listeners. Listening. I'll see you next week.
That's it. See you next week. You know, tune in later when you've actually read this. It says, but the regenerate
But the Renegade Guardian has returned. I am Krona, and I am...
Krona!
I am mad. Krona!
I shot a brick!
I didn't know why I didn't even think that it might be him.
Wow.
Well, I never even thought it would be him. You know?
Well, Krona has been... Krona! Krona! Not too long since we last saw Krona. Krona was the Malthusian tapestry. Malthus is the home planet of the Guardians before they moved to Oa. He was the guy who was obsessed with discovering the, you know, secrets of the origin of the universe, who looked back in time and caused the accident that splintered the universe into the multiverse. And as punishment for that, he was transformed into pure energy by the Guardians, before they were the Guardians, and wandered the cosmos. And I think he came back once or twice in, like, 40 years. It was no big thing. And he hung out with Necron for a little while.
Wasn't he in the Avengers Justice League crossover?
Yes, first encountered him personally.
Yeah, that's the first time I heard him.
He hung out with Necron during Necron's origin story, during Necron's first appearance, the Tales of the Green Core miniseries. So that may well factor into this in some respect. But I first encountered him in the JLA Avengers crossover when he was going from universe to universe trying to find the secrets of the creation and entered into a game with the Grandmaster in the Marvel Universe in which they used the Avengers and the JLA as pawns. And it ultimately wound up Krona tore... because Galactus was the survivor of the previous universe who supposedly would hold the secrets Krona wanted to know. Krona tore him apart and used his energies to merge the DC and Marvel universes. And when it all ended and the Justice League and the Avengers beat him, the creation energies wound up imprisoning Krona in a cosmic egg that a new universe would hatch from. And that cosmic egg was the central plot point of the weekly Trinity series from a year or two ago, the Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman series, in which... a world hatched out of that egg, and the gods of this new world that was born from Krona's egg. And the series ended when he was trying to free himself from within this world, and that was the thrust of the main story. But Trinity was over long and a little complicated. But anyway, the story ended with Krona being condemned to be the consciousness, the world soul of a parallel Earth somewhere else in the multiverse. So that was when we last saw Krona. So what the hell?
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, what the hell?
Well, and Krona... and if we're talking, you know, again, it has implication as far as going back to the multiverse. You know, DC hasn't really, and I was actually talking about this with Buck, my dealer, and they haven't really even dealt with the reemergence of the multiverse very much.
No, it was part of Countdown, but yeah. You know, honestly at this point, I'm really unclear on what DC's position on Countdown is, because so much of it has been openly contradicted by stories that have taken greater precedence. So, I mean, I don't know how much of Countdown is actually considered to have happened at this point. And it hasn't, the multiverse hasn't been a thing since then. So God knows.
But it's like, could this tie back into that? Because obviously this has implications as far as the creation of the multiverse. I mean,
why is he tiny? Krona is not tiny.
Yeah, he is now, apparently.
He looks like he's had a bad string of events. He looks pretty bad when those wrappings come off, so something happens.
Yeah,
to him.
He still doesn't look real great.
Yeah.
But then all I'm remembering is all of the things that we've been hearing this character say to himself over the last, well, he's the one who he claimed to write the Green Lantern Oath.
Yeah,
that's right, isn't it?
This is only a gateway into some totally crazy shit that I think we can expect next issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
They just need to rename Green Lantern into Final Page Surprise.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Because that's all it's been for like the final... last 5 months or something. Yep. You know?
Last month it was
time.
Flash Parallel. Yeah, I mean, it's... Yeah, you know, I mean, the most of the issue is decent. It's not, you know, I wouldn't say it's mostly earth-shattering or anything, but yeah, you get to that final page and you're just like, oh my god!
Nobody, I could not have seen that coming. I mean, I didn't really have any theories that it was a character we knew before. No. I assumed this would be some new figure. I mean,
I figured it'd just be like a guardian, just like some guardian we never heard of before, or something that's was kicked out, is what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know some people, I think, were thinking it was Appa Ayapsa, the guardian who went on the road with Hal Jordan and Green Arrow back in the day, and who became the bad guardian. He was the evil guardian from some story or another that I've never read. But, holy crap, Krona.
Anyway. So that's that. So that's it. Wow. Yeah, we have...
Where does all that love and energy over on Brightest Day, Johns, huh?
Yeah. I don't know. Is he spread too thin? I mean, do we really think that he's...
I don't know. I'm going to point my finger at Peter Tomasi on Brightest Day.
I mean, it's a half and half. It's like him and Tomasi. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, yeah. Tomasi. I don't know. Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's the one writing Emerald Warriors, and you know what JD's saying about that. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to blame him for Brightest Day's feelings. I'm going to assume he wrote that last issue. And that Johns is writing the Aquaman bits.
Yeah.
You know, why didn't they have, like... Well, I guess most of it is... Most of the characters in Brightest Day don't have a tie to other characters, I guess.
Hmm.
I mean, as far as they don't have their own comics at this point.
Well, we'll see what happens after Brightest Day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a feeling we'll be getting another Aquaman comic.
Ooh, Firestorm? Yeah.
And if
Firestorm?
You let Jeff Johns write it, I'll read it.
Yeah.
Yep. That means he'll have to drop something else. What do you want him to drop?
That's not usually how Jeff Johns works, is it? He just takes on another project and just keeps on going either way.
It hasn't been. It probably should.
He'll just wedge it between Flash and Green Lantern and we'll all be good.
They'll be over, so there you go.
He can half a project and take on a full one.
Yeah.
Good
on him. He should be able to. He's Jeff Johns.
That's right. He's Jeff Johns. Miracle Man. I mean, he is... The 2009 Spike Awards, for best comic book writing. So, you know.
And you know it because it's on every issue that he writes.
Every issue that he writes, right there on the cover. Can't miss it. So, anyway, I'm assuming that's not him doing that. But really, like, DC needs to make themselves legitimate by saying they want Spike Awards. I mean, come on. Really? Like, that's convincing. Like, that almost makes me not. It's like, really? A Spike Award? Is this legitimate? Anyway. It's Jeff Johns, though. I know he's good. So there's no question there. So anyway, that's our show. A couple things I'll mention real quick before we close up shop. We are getting very, very close to our end of the year show, big end of the year show. So we want your questions. We want your comments. Send them to... info, I think, at tfradio.net, or send them to our individual emails. We got bunches of those. Send us a question on Twitter, call us, all that info and stuff is on the website, tfradio.net. There's tons of ways to get a hold of us. Just, what do you want to talk about? If there's any big topics out of 2010 that you want us to discuss on the show, we will, I'm starting to get some guests lined up, so hopefully we'll have a few people on that January 2nd show. Another thing,
we probably won't have a show next week, folks. It being Boxing Day or whatever the hell you guys call it.
Oh, I'll be here. It's
post Christmas Day.
Yeah,
that's
what
I call it.
Post Christmas Day. So Triple and I, maybe I'll get McFeely on I'll get Kilby on if you're not going to be here, McFeely. So
I don't know. Just because everybody's off being festive.
I'll be here. I don't have anywhere.
Merry making.
Yeah. I don't have family. I don't know. Are you gonna? I'm planning on being here, even if it's
no
just me. I'll sit here for 45 minutes and talk to myself if I have to have a show next week. But we'll see. I don't know. We may see.
Tell us about that Justice League Lost Generation or whatever. Generation
Lost.
What is that?
Gen
Lost. There you go.
I'll just talk about how awesome Gen Lost is.
Remember.
I'll talk about Gen Lost for 45 minutes.
There you go.
and just talk about how great that is. But other thing I want to say thank you once again, we are partnered with Comic News International. Their website is Comic News I, so you can check them out as well. They're posting our show and everything over there. Also, the video version of this show is being posted on YouTube. I think we've got the entire backlog of video episodes for the series is on YouTube, so you can join the channel there, get all of the video episodes, which is mainly just watching me, because I don't have, like, a cool setup like Kilby. But, anyway, I think that's it. Hopefully we're going to do a contest next year. I've got a great idea for a contest, but I've got to get all the bits together to make it work. So, but anyway. Any guys, anything else? Is that it? We're good?
No.
I think that's it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Well, hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for watching if you're watching it on video. And please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus
Christmas.
This has been Fanboy Versus with your hosts, J.D. Church, Chris McFeely, and Chris Triplett. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2010, Radio Free Cybertron.